Welcome to Engineering Success. I'm your host, Jamie Hutton, and in each episode we'll bring you an influential and inspiring guest from the world of engineering, science, technology and mathematics, sharing fascinating insights into their career journeys. We'll explore the challenges they face, how they keep motivated, and what the future holds for them. Speaking candidly about the engineering and other STEM-related industries, we'll find out what's made these successful people successful. This is Engineering Success. Welcome to episode number 37 of Engineering Success with our very special guest, Laura Giddings, the founder of the STEM Project. Laura founded the STEM Project so that she could continue to work with like-minded people who had a passion and enthusiasm to inspire the current and next generation into STEAM and more. An established award-winning STEM education manager with a flair for breaking the mould and pushing the boundaries to build strong STEM communities, projects and networks in the UK, she is a naturally passionate advocate for young people, working to build bridges across industries, government and education to secure stronger foundations for the future. Working towards gaining her Master's in STEM Education from King's College London, she puts into practice these teachings and professional experiences she's gained from her time at The New Scientist, the Royal Institution and RS Components in her day-to-day management of a rapidly growing agency of STEAM experts. Hi Laura, and welcome to Engineering Success. It's great to have you on the podcast today.
Hi Jamie, thank you for having me.
Yeah, can we start? How did you first become interested in engineering?
It's a tough question. I would probably say the most obvious answer is I fell into it.
Right.
I'm not an engineer by trade, by any means or any stretch, but I built my interest further into STEAM and STEM by working with an organisation who did focus and support in engineering. And when I do sit and I think about how engineering has impacted and affected my life, I think back to when I was younger and I had the workings or skill development of an engineer in the making, in that I was extremely keen to find out how things worked. I loved finding out how things would work. I wasn't the child who took apart their parents' microwaves, TVs or computers. I was quite the opposite. I was the child who would say, this is how this works and this is why I want it. I want a computer, Dad, and I would help you build it. I'll help you program it. I'll do all the things for it. And yeah, I was very interested on the hands-on how things worked.
Right.
But never really kind of got introduced to what is an engineer and engineering until adulthood, really.
Right.
It's something which has definitely excelled my career and definitely excelled my passions. And I've learned an awful lot about it and continue to learn a lot about the industry. It's a fantastic industry, and there's so much amazing work happening there, and I'm thrilled to be part of the continuing inspiration to that.
Yeah. So your route to becoming the founder of the STEM Project is quite amazing, and I would say extremely unique. Could you share that with us from when you were at school to where you are today?
Yeah. So I left school at 16. I barely passed my GCSEs. It is on the record, people will find it, I did fail my maths in GCSE. But it was strange because even the teachers couldn't understand why I didn't do well in my exams, because I was deemed to be an extremely smart child, but just struggled with examinations.
Right.
So leaving school, I had a passion to actually become a vet. I watched a lot of docu-series, nature programs, and animal-related health shows when I was a child. And yeah, that was my passion, was to move into medical for animals. Because I didn't get the grades I needed at GCSE, I was given careers advice, which instead, because I couldn't go into A levels because I didn't get the appropriate grades to go to A level, to seek a vocational course. So I did a BTEC in animal management at Moulton College in Northamptonshire. So that's a 2-year course. And there were no examinations, it was all essay based. And the way that vocational courses back then, I can't be sure if it's the same right now. But it was a matter of you had past merit and distinction on your work, and they equivalent at the end of it became an equivalent to an A level grade. So I passed my BTEC animal management in with triple distinction, which is equivalent to 3 A stars at A level. And I was then told go and apply for the vet universities, and I did, and I didn't get into a single one because the response I got was, "We don't take BTEC, but we only take A level."
Unbelievable,
Which, yeah, was quite soul destroying at the time. I did everything that I was told was would work, and yeah, for about, I remember just sitting for like 3 weeks and a little bit of a shell shock of, well, what do I do? Done my UCAS application, I've done everything you told me to do, education. I'm not going to do what I want to do. And so I sat with my parents, I sat with my friends, family, and sat with my tutor. And I said, look, I still want to go down this route. I kind of want to move into that conservation arena and education. And so they kind of told me to do a bit of like a 90, 180 degree flip. And so instead of applying, looking at universities to apply for veterinary science, I then flipped it to do zoology, animal ecology. I know, I do love playing this game. You've got a degree, I have, and you're never going to guess what it is. Generally, I always get picked engineering now, actually. People do say, did you do engineering now? So yeah, I did a B, sorry, a Bachelor of Science in Zoology at Bangor University in North Wales. I chose Bangor, so I had a choice of a couple of universities then, because again, I went through clearing, I had the appropriate grades. I chose Bangor because I was at a time in my life where I had gone through education, and I was bullied week in, week out, because bookworm. I loved reading, I loved writing, I loved computers. I was the nerd child. But I wanted to go somewhere that no one knew me. So I experienced that all through school and in college. Didn't just stop in secondary school. I wanted to go somewhere where I can kind of become something that I don't know if I am that yet. So I decided to go to North Wales. I live in the Midlands, to put into context. And yeah, I did it all myself. I did all the paperwork, found my halls, got my parents to sign the forms just to say, I can get my loans and all means tested and things like that. And I just said, here's my moving in date. Can you take me? And they did. So I did go to an open day there as well. And that's a fun story. I'd only passed my driving test a week before I went to the open day. So Wales, petrified. And the A55, if you've ever travelled that on Friday or Saturday, 1 week after passing your test, definitely scared the hell out of you. But yeah, so that was a fun drive. But I had a great open day. I loved university. I learned a lot about myself, socially. I didn't know a single person the first day of university. I remember walking into the quad, it's a beautiful big quad. A little tip out there, if anyone loves Harry Potter and you don't want to go to Scotland, go to North Wales. They've got beautiful castles and buildings. I'm pretty sure it could be a replica for the quad. I remember walking through the beautiful big quad and just looked around, and I'm like, these are zoology students. I don't know a single person. I looked around and I saw this really tall person. And I think because I was always classed as a tall person in my school, I just went to the tallest person I could see, introduced myself, And they introduced themselves. So his name's James Shooter, and his friend Rog Hodgson. Oh, sorry, Rob Hodgson. And they were from Matlock, and they were my friends, my best friends from the whole of university.
Wow.
Then we started creating a very big social group. So I had friends who were academics, sports, photography, surfers. My whole kind of social world built within university, and I learned a lot more there about myself, about confidence. I would have classed as an introvert as a young person. I wouldn't say big news. What came out of uni, and I became the opposite, really. But I loved it. I loved university. But then again, I was at a point where, careers were still kind of finding their feet. I didn't get the best grade in university, not gonna lie. But I got my degree nonetheless, and I still managed to go on to do a master's recently. I'll talk about that one in a moment. And so yeah, I came out of university. I was quite then hooked on the whole conservation piece. There was a huge focus coming out from the BBC, Channel 4. Bristol Productions were doing quite a lot down there. That's where people should go if they're interested in that element of film making and conservation. It's not London, it's Bristol. And so yeah, I was all hooked on wanting to do that. But again, the issue of state that I've found, and so many of my peers in university found, is that there were no jobs. That whole kind of, you're going to come out of university, full on a fee, 40 grand a year job is just not, it's
No.
absolutely, it wasn't true then, it's not true now, probably less true now than it was ever before. But yeah, so doing that, I kind of then just flipped it and went, well, what am I good at? Oh, I'm good at working with young people. I looked at kind of education roles in zoos and parks, conservation parks and wildlife trusts. But again, there was nothing there. And so yeah, I kind of just did the next best thing, and I became a nanny for a year. What do you when you can't find a job? Do something else. I was a nanny for a year. I worked with Liverpool. I was with the family. The contract was 6 months, so I was there for 6 months. And then the second family I worked with, they were a family of solicitors, and I was the nanny for their. How old was he? He was 14 months old when I got there. I was just barely walking and talking, and I was there for just over a year, actually. And by the time I left, he was walking, talking, counting, and it was lovely, and I had a great time. And they're still good friends of mine now. It terrifies me because that the young boy is now a young man, and he's going into secondary school, and I'm like, wow. So no, I was that for a while, and then I kind of got told by my parents, you need to come and get an adult job now. So I'm about 23, 22, 23 at that time. And yeah, I kind of, again, it was really hard. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I went into an office role doing admin. I barely lasted 3 months. I actually got sacked, because I kept like, how does this work? How does that work? How can I do And I was like, oh, how can I, how can I, I'm interested in careers, I'm interested in this, I'm interested. And yeah, they didn't like that. Yeah, no, that's sad. But after that, I then went, I fell into a graduate program for a company called MISCO, based in a town I live called Wellingborough, a very big IT a supplier, what they call the distribution channel for information technology. So I joined the team, and I was selling printers and print ink to small businesses. And tell you what, sales is a hard, hard, hard sector. And anyone who says he's not is lying. Even the salespeople who are the best salespeople say it's the hardest thing in the world. But within about a year, I moved from selling printers and print ink to selling £250,000 servers. And very big IT refresh opportunity. So there was a, I had opportunity that I was growing and developing my client base as well as the teams that I worked in. I still wasn't quite happy. Again, mid 20s, what do you do? You're making a bit of money, you're making this, but I just didn't enjoy it entirely. And I started doing some work on the side. I used to go and do brand ambassador work at events. So when you see people on stands, like yogurt samples or leaflets or things and pieces like that. I did that for a little while, and I loved it.
Right, okay.
I kind of had that same thing living back in university again,
Yeah.
and I was meeting new people, I was finding about different industries and whatnot. And the first big event I worked at was one of the largest exhibitions in the UK, that was the World Travel Market,
Right.
and I loved it. It felt like a village. It was amazing. I met all these different people from loads of different countries. It was awesome. And the job I was doing was just a very basic handout leaflet job, but it was lovely, and I made very good money doing that. And that is a very good paying kind of role.
Right.
And then again, my brain went, well, how do I get a career in this? How do I do this? How do I do that? And then I started looking for jobs and careers in exhibitions.
Right.
So sales, I can do sales, I can talk to people, I can negotiate, I can plan, I can do that. So yeah, from there I was still living in Northamptonshire with my parents. And then I decided to pack it up and move to Essex. I got a job from an exhibition company in Essex,
Right.
who run the big shows like Grand Designs and the Ideal Home Show,
Okay, yeah.
specialism shows. So I worked on design shows, architecture design shows that they had, and I really enjoyed it. And again, I wasn't an architect, I wasn't a designer, but I really appreciated the industry.
Yeah.
And then I worked on the international side of that, so I actually spoke to a lot of the embassies around the world,
Right.
as well as those in the UK. So I was in charge of bringing in these international pavilions to these big design shows.
Yeah.
Great time. I learned a lot again, made very, very good money, because it is a very big, high paced sales job. And you learn so much about yourself and time management and skill and sales and customer service. It's, yeah, that's the quickest way to learn, is literally in that kind of setting and scenario.
Yeah.
And it helped me build a lot of thick skin, and you have to in that kind of role.
Yeah.
Again, still wasn't quite happy. I kept thinking there was something missing. I was enjoying what I was doing. And then luckily, I saw something get posted out on LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn a lot at the time to find new leads, and now I use it today as one of my most powerful networking tools.
Yeah,
And I absolutely rave about LinkedIn till the day ends, because it's
yeah. Yeah.
and I saw a post come up from The New Scientist. Again, I was a nerd child, remember?
Yeah.
So instead of getting Girls Talk magazine and Ms. magazines, I would ask my parents to find me The New Scientist when I was 12. Not many kids do that anymore.
No.
And I loved it. And it was, I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I left a comment going, oh, this looks great. It'd be a great show to work on. Good luck, everybody. And then I got a message from the event director, his name's Mike Sherrard at the time. And he's like, do you want to come in and have a chat? And I did, and then within 6 weeks I started working at New Scientist,
Wow.
and I was the part of the team that launched the New Scientist Live. Again, that's so hard to be able to build an exhibition off a brand
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was, at that time, it just turned 100 years old as a publication, one of the
Right.
oldest in the country. And yeah, it was making waves in the world of science and STEAM and STEM. And I could say that's when my professional career started in STEM, was when I was really into New Scientist.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I was there for just under 2 years. I managed the Earth Zone and the technology and partial engineering zone, because we
Yeah.
split them out over themes. So I was working with big brands like BP, Shell, Microsoft, BT. And it was fantastic. Again, I started building a network. I worked with lots of universities, so lots of startups. And again, I love the exhibition world.
Yeah.
And I was there for 2 years. We won quite a lot of awards over those first 2 years, from launch of the year, show of the year. Really hard and known for those shows to get those kind of
Yeah,
accolades, which
I
is
can
really
imagine,
cool.
yeah.
I got 30 under 30 in the exhibition industry too, which, that was a weird feeling. All of a sudden, you're like a, it's like a pick list. I'm sure it's a pick list. The minute they say who the 30 is on the list, I kept getting messages from people from organizations I hadn't heard of or worked for before in events. So it was a very interesting time. I didn't go anywhere in any other exhibitions. I considered it, but I thought I'm really into STEM and STEAM. So I stayed at the New Scientist for a bit longer. And then I had just started a new relationship at that time, which was based back in Northamptonshire, and I was still living in London then.
Right.
So I wanted to look for a job close to home. Love living in London. Again, I think it's something everyone should do for at least a year, if not 6 months, well, 3 months, depending which financial environment you're in, like we are today.
Yeah.
But it was, again, it was an amazing, amazing time there. So I was looking for another job closer to home. And yeah, I saw a job come up at a company I'd never heard of before called RS Components. And this was about October 2017. I saw this job come up. This is a bit of me. I could do this. It's education linked. You know, I don't know a ton about engineering, but I know enough that I can learn more about it. And you know, the whole, just because you don't tick every single box doesn't mean you shouldn't try. And
absolutely,
that's something my parents always encouraged me to do. And so I went and interviewed in October. The project was to manage this big truck they had called Titan 2. They wanted to take it out to schools and colleges, and it had gone to a few universities. They trialed it at a couple of schools previous and they saw a big opportunity here. I said, look, I've worked with young people, I've done this, I'm interested in doing more. Like, this kind of went back to the throwback I had of working in zoos and conservation to help young people consider that career.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, well, there's not a ton of difference, and there isn't. It's still I interviewed, went there. I went to the launch day of the Titan, which was in Manchester, at the BBC studios.
Right.
We actually got told off by BBC News because we had the gentleman, Richard Browning, who had just started to become quite well known for his 3D printed jetpack. We had him flying over the truck. Manchester, Media City, and you could hear it on the TV. We did have them come out and strongly advise us not to do that again.
Right.
Which was quite, I didn't plan that day, by the way. I will always point that out. I went there, and then obviously I got offered the job because I wanted to find out more about it before I accepted anything. And then, so I left New Scientist, moved out of London, back to Northamptonshire, and then I started at RS Components in December 2017.
Right.
So when I was there, again, I just had the truck to look after. And within 3 months, I rewrote the whole programme because I kept thinking to myself, this 12-year-old me wouldn't like this, 14-year-old me wouldn't like this, 16-year-old me wouldn't like this. And then I asked some of the young people we were engaging with, what do you want to hear? What do you want to know?
Yeah, yeah.
They told me, tell us this. I want to know this. How do you do that? So I rewrote the whole kind of engagement piece we did, moving away from that salesy pitch to actually the inspiration pitch. And I did that within about 3 months and said, what else can I do? And they were like, well, here's a blank sheet with a bit of an idea of what we think education is. Here's a 300k budget, have at it. And that was literally the launch of the whole education program.
Wow.
So it had already had some engagement for universities and colleges, and we were doing work around apprenticeships and stuff at the time. It was quite far removed from what we were really wanting to hone in on. So 2018 was a very interesting year. Considering I joined in 2017 and I had 3 weeks to also then plan our attendance to the BET show, which at the time was in January.
Right.
I was doing that alongside other bits. And again, to me, that was bread and butter. It was so easy to do. But then building up to all these other exhibitions was great, and using the truck as like a delivery vessel. We then started building out what could education look like? What is our strategy? What's our plan? What's our program? Considering the business at the time didn't have a lot of engagement in the world of ed tech or education technology, there was a lot of research that we were doing there. So yeah, it went from managing a truck to then building a strategy with my director at the time, James Howarth. He was very, very knowledgeable, very experienced for the whole distribution arena for engineering.
Right.
And yeah, together we kind of just put our heads together and said, this is what it could be, this is what it could look like. We had a lots of disagreements, and we had a lot of agreements. And I think that's what worked really well, is that there wasn't a team of 10 or 20 or 40 or whatever. It was two people with differing opinions and ideas, completely different career pathways.
Yeah.
He'd been from the armed forces, so he had a really regimented idea of how we engage for education, and I
Yeah.
came uppity career pathway. My career pathway was very not on the trodden path.
Yeah.
So yeah, we balanced each other out, and yeah, we built that program up, and we developed a 5-year plan,
Right.
and said, look, we set the milestones, we'll do this over the next few years. So that meant increasing our ambassadors. So we increased our STEM ambassadors. So we worked very closely with STEM
Right.
Learning
Yeah.
and the local hub in Northamptonshire. So we went from about 10 proper, I say proper ambassadors at the time, who were actually going out delivering and engaging with schools.
Yeah.
We upped that to about 40 quite
Right.
quickly.
Yeah.
And I was managing and training those people as well. So I was running almost like weekly training sessions, if not monthly sessions, with the
Yeah.
local hub. And then we doubled that number and doubled it again. And within the first 18 months, we got to 150
Wow.
ambassadors. By the end of the second year, beginning of the third year, we got to 300
Wow.
ambassadors. And what is important to know across that is that those ambassadors were not just then based in the East Midlands, although a large percentage were. They were then UK wide, and then also it naturally started growing to become a global program.
Okay. Yeah.
Not bad for coming into running a truck, right? So yeah, everyone in the business really, really bought into it and were super supportive. And Lindsay Roof and David Egan were amazing supporters and mentors, and always had open door policy that we could
Yeah.
go and talk to them. So on occasion, I'd be in London, stick my head in, say hi, have a cup of tea, and catch up, and it was lovely. And we got so many ideas of what they wanted us to do and direction, and it was great because we were able to have that.
Yeah, yeah,
Not
yeah.
many businesses did allow that or do allow that
No.
now. And so yeah, so we built up a cool, amazing program, and then, like so many of us, COVID hit, and
Yeah.
it hit hard. Obviously, I remember we were going to a school on the Friday before everything just switched off. I call it the switch off. It was a Friday when we were
Yeah.
going to a school, and it was a local school, and I was walking there, and I had my phone out, and I was like messaging on the ambassador, like, we're at the Big Bang next week, like I've cleared, like you're all happy, like health wise, safety wise, everyone was happy to go, the suppliers were ready to go, the stand builders were ready to go, everyone was ready to go, because the plan was that night I was going to pack my bag ready to go to Birmingham on the Monday.
Right.
And I remember walking to the school, and I remember getting a phone call from James saying, we can't go to the Big Bang next week. And I'm like, what do you mean we can't go to the Big Bang? They've not cancelled it. Everyone is happy to go. And he's like, no, company don't want us to. I was like, right, we're at school today. We'll go back and talk to company later. Let's
Yeah.
go to the school. Just trying to crack on, because we were doing an ed tech workshop. And yeah, we were halfway through the workshop. It got to lunchtime, and then I had a missed call on my phone, and it was Engineering UK. And James had a couple of missed calls in his phone. It was business. So by the sounds of it, like they were trying to get in touch with us.
Yeah.
And so I picked up the phone, and it was a voicemail saying, we're really, really sorry, but we're cancelling or postponing the Big Bang next week.
Yeah.
This is where we are with everything. And then, considering I had pushed James back to say, please come and argue that we need to go to the show, please, if we can, please can we, because based on health, security, all of that,
Yeah.
we ticked all the boxes on at 9 o'clock that morning.
Right.
But to be fair, the Big Bang had already cancelled by lunchtime, and it was really sad. And then all of a sudden, it was, this is actually very, 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 very serious, to see how it just took out engagement overnight. So we got everything got cancelled and postponed. All school upcoming events and bits and pieces literally just wiped out the calendars. And then department by department, we're being put on furlough. We were education, so we were put on furlough. And yeah, it was a very long 3.5 months. I mentally didn't do very well during furlough. Right. And luckily I was then called back at the end of the summer, beginning of autumn. I really wanted to kind of hit the ground running. I was like, you know, there's so much that we've missed, so much that's not been supported. What can we do next? And then, then there was a restructure that came in into the business because of the way COVID had impacted education. They needed to review how we were engaging, which was consistent across the industry and consistent across the whole board. Within 6 months of me joining the other half of the education team, so we had higher, further education, and we were kind of that primary and secondary education. We joined forces, but we were just finding that the engagement was dropping rapidly. And unfortunately I was a victim of COVID in that my role and position was then made redundant. So the business took a really, really hard decision, and I don't hold it against them at all. I get where they had to, why they did it and how they had to do it. But they had to change STEM in the format and that it was being delivered. So they still do elements of that for higher education, further education, right, but don't do much with schools at the moment. So that was a decision they had to make, and I was out the door by the summer, really. Very, very hard, very, very hard to take that, because I loved my job. It wasn't, to me, again, I was like, it wasn't a job, actually it's a passion.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if I was ever going to feel that again, because none of the other jobs I had did that to me. And then I had a little bit of redundancy payout, because I'd been there for a few years. And again, IRS are a fantastic company working for in that respect for supports and benefits. And so I took my redundancy, put half of it away to live, not knowing what's going to come next.
Yeah.
And then the other half, I went and built my own business, my own agency. I built a limited company called The STEM Project with a view that I really enjoyed doing what I did for IRS. And I have a multi-skill approach and ability that the exposure I had for industry was quite unique and varied. So I could do so many different roles, and I wanted to do them all and not just one or two. I more or less then created my own job, because that's what we've kept telling young people, create your own job. Eventually took my own advice. So then I created the STEM Project. I did, whilst I then worked a couple of contract jobs, I worked at the Royal Institution. So I left in July for RS. I joined the Royal Institution in August.
Right.
So I was only supposed to be there 2 months. So I was there for longer, which was great. And then they were like, do you want to stay here permanently? This is what it is. And I was like, do you know what? I really can't do want to keep doing what I want to do, though, because if I stay here, I'm going to get too comfortable. I then thought, if I stay closer to home, because I was traveling to London every day from Northamptonshire, I could work closer to home and still do some project stuff on the side, and that's what I did. So I went and got a job at a farm shop, which is very random. I know that it was a farm shop that was actually managed by the Creating Tomorrow Trust in Northamptonshire, which is a trust which supports schools with young people with special education, mental health needs. So considering I have worked with many, many young people in that guise, this farm shop was a business, but it was an educational platform business. We were selling fruit and veg and things and pieces to Joe Blogs, but also those young people were understanding business. They were understanding product, they're understanding distribution, supply chain, and I was part of the staff in that I help support them in their roles
right,
in the shop.
So
yeah, it was a very interesting role. I'd never seen something like that before, and the trust doing amazing work here in Northamptonshire to continue that progression for young people with special education needs. And so I was there for a few months. I had done a couple of side hustle jobs on the STEM project from then. So I had designed an event day for a local education trust.
Right.
I was going to deliver it face-to-face, but the COVID restrictions hadn't gone away then.
Okay.
And then so we were 10 days out. I remember that one. And they said, we're going to have to cancel it. Like, we can't, like, COVID's not going away. Restrictions aren't going to be lifted. We can't justify doing it.
Yeah.
We'll get slaughtered if we did. And I said, well, why don't I rewrite it? Let me see what I can salvage from this and whether we can deliver it digitally.
Yeah.
And I did. So 10 days out, it took me about 5 days to rewrite it, to magpie the right parts from the content that we were going to do. And then it broke down to 3 themes over the day. And we had a couple of speakers join us virtually, and I rewrote the content to apply to adapt for the day so it could support young people in the classroom and at home and not miss out. And we got some fantastic feedback from that, and it was great because those students went into their year 7 this year, this academic year just gone. And so they had some inspiration to kind of consider
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yes, so that was my first big project. And then I've then worked with an engineering company to help them rewrite some of their strategy work, similar to what I had done for RS. And then projects started coming in. And then it got to June this year. And I turned down a massive project. And I was like, you know, I can't do it. I'm working in the shop.
Yeah.
I turned it down. I'm like, I've just turned down one of the probably would have been my game changing project. And it griped me then. And then I was like, right, if I'm going to make the decision, I'm going to do it now. Like, why not? And so I did. So in June 2022, this year, I sacked in my full time job at the farm shop. Still see them. Great guys. Go down there every other week to get my bits that I need and support them. And, yeah, I've been doing the STEM project full time since June. So wow. Yeah, a year ago today, November, it wasn't really much of a thing,
and now
it's a thing. And the STEM project originally was my side hustle to do extra work, and now it's a agency or a consultative agency made up from people in education, industry, science, communication, research. That I've kind of handpicked a lot of these people through my time.
Yeah.
And said, come and work with me. Got some cool projects going on. And now I've got something in the region of about 30 freelancers who work within the project. We're about to take on 20 STEM youth directors. Again, they're freelancers.
Yeah.
And they'll be involved with some of the bigger projects that are coming in the new year. So we've got a variety across various sectors. So sectors this year, I've got a board next to me, so I can look at the projects I've got. So sectors this year, we're looking at some things with science centres, big technology companies, company universities. I'm looking at a few things with the armed forces at the moment. A couple of charity-based organisations as well, resource designers. Huge global resource designers and a couple of distribution companies as well. And we've now started to do more work in the heritage sector. So as much as the STEM and STEAM is linked to those industry pieces, something I've discovered over the last 4 months is that museums, galleries across the UK have got a huge piece in agenda for education and STEM and STEAM. And we've got a couple of projects coming up with various locations next year.
Right.
So the STEM project, started off with my side hustle. And now it's a full-time job for me. It's the same feeling I had when I was at RS, is that it doesn't feel like a job. I wake up every day going, oh my God, I wake up every day And yeah, I can't pick and choose what I'm doing. I've got a couple of projects that are linked directly to myself, which, you know, they pay my day, they pay my month, they pay my bills, my mortgage. And yeah, that's the plan, is to kind of not grow much more as a team,
right?
But look at how we build out more further long term projects. We're actually looking at developing a research side to the agency in the next year. One of a consultant joined me this year who he's amazing. Her name's Charlotte. And she's got a fantastic background. She's been doing science outreach communication for nearly 10 years.
Right, okay.
And she got in touch with me when she found out about who we were and said, I want to come work with you. So, yeah, we've got a couple of projects we're on together with next year. And she's going to be doing, yeah, she's got a fantastic formula in development that we're reviewing to measure impact and engagement and showing how we can take a practice and show the impact it's had for young people, the business, and how that would stretch out looking forward into the future, which is a very big thing that a lot of organizations are now going, we are coming back into this, how can we justify our 300,000, 500,000, or even our £4,000 budget for this year? And impact and engagement has always been the question that people ask. Now we're going in a bigger field for that too. So again, a year ago, it wasn't much of a thing. 6 months ago, it was a kind of like, let's kick the tires and see what happens. And now we're looking at a plan and a strategy over the next 2 years, which is growing out a research and development arm. We're going to look at writing our own content, and we're going to publish that all for free as well online, which links to the curriculum and the UN Sustainable Goals. I've had a couple of contacts from overseas who want to kind of take what we're doing as a model and pull it over there.
Right.
I've turned down investment twice this year because I'm not ready to let anything go. And also it's I think it having something which is like privately controlled for myself and the team that I work with, and I deploy a flat leadership model in that there's so many people in the agency, but there's about 10 to 12 who I talk to every single week, whether we're on projects together or not. And I ask their opinion, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And if a majority of them say we shouldn't do it, we won't do it. The people who are part of the project are as much responsible for who we talk to, who we work with, and what we look like going forward. Again, this was a model that I learned about when I was doing my master's. So I started my master's just before I got made redundant.
Right.
Which was painful, again, in an academic, personal focus side. It was a weird experience in a way. So I'm doing my master's in STEM and education at King's College in London. And it's pitched for educators and business.
Right.
And I've gone in and I have learned so much. And I'm taking a lot of those learnings and deploying them into my practice as well. But also I've shared so much back into the program and with my peers who are in education. So we've actually helped recognize barriers on both sides of our coin. And I think previous conversations I've had with you is that we talk a lot about this gap. It's the gap. It's not the gap on the tube or the gap on the train. Skills gap that everyone keeps talking about. That's not, I think, the thing we should be most concerned about, because those skills are being worked on now, being developed. What we should worry about is the chasm between business and education and sectors and research. Like, we all keep working in silos, and you can tick a box to say you've had 4 students come in as part of a placement, here's a certificate, here's a picture. But what are you actually teaching them? What skills are you teaching them? And that goes back to the STEAM youth directors. So originally I was only going to take on 5. I had over 100 applications. I'm a little bit delayed coming back to them because it has just been so hard to shortlist.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Shortlisted them down to 48. And every single applicant is going to get feedback before Christmas.
Yeah.
I've got a very busy month coming up. And they're all getting the feedback directly from me. So I've gone through every single application, reviewing it and going through it line by line. I think that's extremely important. Not many businesses or organisations will even do that. But also those who have been shortlisted, I am setting up to go and see as many of them as I can face to face.
Right.
But many of them, whether they're 14, 15, 16, 17, because that's the age bracket we're looking for, many of them have done speed interviews or mock interviews. But that's speed interviews. I've never had a speed interview in my life, in my career. Mock interviews are very, they ask questions that are very 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And yeah, so these interview, the second stage interview is made up of 10 questions. And a lot of that is it links to us as an organization. There's going to be a practical task as well, which literally does not require prep. It literally just requires brain power. And yeah, we're going to take all of those back. And then I've got to make a decision over Christmas again for the new year, because I want students who have got interests. If they've only got a sole interest in physics, but they stand out, then I'm going to take them. But if they've got an interest in sustainability, physics, space, I'm going to take them, because I want them to see that industry doesn't work in we are only over here, we're only at STEAM, STEM is everywhere. It's a cross-curricular discipline, it's a cross-curricular industry.
Yeah.
And the more we talk about that in industry, and the more we highlight that and educate that in schools. And this doesn't come down to the teacher's role predominantly. It comes down to what's been advised in the curriculum.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it comes to, well, who influences that? And the influencers are, you know, those global think tanks, the government. And so, yeah, there's this vicious circle, and I can tell where the bend in the circle is. And that's kind of what I'm going after. The next 6 years, really.
Break wow.
That make the pathway from education into industry a lot less unique. Mine is unique, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I've learned so much.
Yeah.
And I still say today, I don't actually know what I'm going to do when I'm much older. I've only in my head, I'm still 23. Take off that what you will. But I've something I've learned, especially in the last year, through COVID and through work, through losing roles and relationships ending, relationships starting, passing of close family and close friends, is time is extremely valuable. Time is extremely important.
Yeah.
And as long as you're doing something you enjoy and it brings you happiness, and you know you're doing it for you, and what that means going forward, whether that's a family, whether that's a ripple effect, whether that's what you're doing in 3 years or 4 years from now, I think time is extremely key.
Yeah.
And the quicker you can find what makes you happy, the longer you're going to be happy.
Yeah.
And that's something that has really kind of struck a chord with me this year. That's why I wake up every day going, I like what I do. You know, there are hard days, don't get me wrong, but I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, in a very, very, very long answer to your question, of becoming that, it's all of that, really.
Yeah. Amazing answer.
Amazing answer.
Very long, yes, like you say, but amazing. It's an amazing journey, I think. So how do you think, because obviously you're going to schools and you do all this stuff, how do you think we enthuse the next generation?
That's another very long answer. I couldn't make it so long. I hate doing it, but it's easier for me to answer it if I have to ask you a question back. Is enthuse them in what? Are you enthusing them in? Are you looking to enthuse them in STEM? Are you looking to enthuse them in sport? Are you looking to enthuse them in happiness? Are you looking to enthuse them in leadership? I think if you have kind of a bit more of a what is the focus, you'll have a stronger direction. But either way, it should be what that young person wants, not what we think they need.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to the, why are you taking 20 young people on? that's more or less nearly half of your adult, she says in quotation marks, your adult working force. And I'm like, yeah. Because if we don't listen to the 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds now,
Yeah.
how are we any different to think tanks than everybody else behind us telling us what they should be teaching?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Like, some of these applications are better than any of the covering letters I've ever wrote. I've definitely gone away and gone, wow, I feel small. Yeah, some of them are mind-blowing. And
Yeah.
I've got, you know what, if they're 15 and they can articulate that in a paragraph, why aren't we listening to them? So it'll come down to what are you trying to enthuse them in? STEM and STEAM is very broad, very brave, very big. And that's the question we ask back to our clients. Well, what's it you do? What's it you want? You can do anything. Any of us can do anything. What is it you want? And but then also going into the crux of what do you actually need though? Because what you want probably doesn't really mean what you need. Because sometimes there's a little gap there that we should fill. But young people, the way to enthuse them is to talk to them, listen to them, make it fair, make it open for them to have conversations. Many young people will go to their parents and say, you know, I'm dead interested in engineering. I want to be an engineer. And it did break my heart every day when I have a young person go, yeah, I'm not going to be an engineer. Why? Oh, I'm not going to fix cars. Okay. Engineers. Where do you think they just fix cars? Like, you just,
Yeah, no, yeah.
you've got to kind of get the conversation going. It's not a to and fro. It's a conversation. It's a debate. And I think many of us forget that, or some many people as well don't have the time to have those conversations. A lot of my friends and my peers and some of the guys in the agency say, you don't do the face-to-face, do this. And I'm like, no, because I need to find out why they want it. And I need to hear the passion. I need to see you, the excitement. Because to me, that's it really, really key. I'm not going to take young people into work experience programs or placement programs or freelance roles unless they can tell me why they need it or why they want it. And I've done work experience interviews before, and this, again, just to reiterate, this is not a work experience, this is a paying role they're coming into. But I've done work experience interviews before. Oh, what do you know about us? Oh, you do this. Nope. It's like, what's your prep? Like, writing is great, don't get me wrong, and I'm 99% sure they've all wrote their own. But you know, when you're like, I need to hear it come from your mouth, I need to see an inspiration in your eyes. And yeah, I think that's really key, is enthuse those who maybe don't know what it is they want, but open that debate and discussion up.
So then what would your number one piece of advice be for somebody who's looking for a career in engineering?
I see, I've got so many people come after me now explaining this. I would say don't look at specific job roles, which kind of goes against everything that we've been told for years. Don't look at the job roles you see today. Look at the job roles that were there 20 years ago. Look at what's there today, but don't focus on just those sole ones. Think about what was there, think about what's here today, but think about what do you want to do with that in the future? You know, you want to do engineering, okay, why? That's always my first one. Why? Why engineering? You know, I really like building and making things. Okay, in what? Woodwork, metalwork, design, technology? Do you like coding? Do you like building? Do you like, you know, what's why? What is it? And then all of a sudden, you're not talking about job roles, you're talking about interests. Take away that whole stigma of you've got to pick a job before you're 16. I can't say it anymore because I'm 34, but I do say, I don't know what my job role is going to be when I'm an adult. I don't know what I'm going to do next because I don't think this will be my only thing I ever do. And it will lead to other things and do more things. And I think that's what's inspiring, is that you don't have one job role. And what we were saying previously was that, you know, previous generations in our lives, and our parents or our grandparents, great grandparents, were told, pick a job and that's it. That's one job for life. Studies out about how that mentality has changed. Side hustles are a real thing. They're not side hustles, they're freelance roles. What does bug me is when people say it's a 0 hour contract. It is and it isn't, because freelancers can do whatever they want. 0 hour generally means you will get what's given to you. But a freelancer will actually say, well, I'm going to go out, I'm going to do this here, I'm going to do this here, I'm going to do that there. So it's in their own control. And that's what we do. But I think, yeah, a career in engineering is consider why, and what do you want to do? And you'll be amazed at the answers you get from them. Again, I'm getting flashbacks to being on the truck. And we had this virtual reality headset, and we had this augmented reality. And all the students were like running to virtual reality because, it's cool tech. You have two or three floating around this augmented reality. And for those who don't know what augmented reality is, think of Pokemon Go. When you saw the app, you people running around London, oh, weird, running around London, watching people run across the street in London. Watch out for the bus was the biggest. So that's augmented reality, is that your map or the image was coded based on an image within the image, or it was viewing something else. So we use this augmented reality tool, and I love talking to the young people about it. And then when you explain to them, augmented reality is, it has been around for a very long time actually. Pokemon Go and Nintendo massively capitalized on that. But if you, I bet no one can really recall what Nintendo really did in those 3 years before augmented reality.
No,
Just
probably.
one of those brands. And when you think about what did they do between that, in my life, all I can remember is the Switch and then Pokemon Go. But what did they do in that big chunk of time? They developed, they innovated, they adapted. Many big brands didn't. We know that. you get the idea, is that they innovated, they adapted. They didn't tell anyone what they were doing, they just did it. And then it just blew the world up by doing it. And as the GM people, it takes a simple idea to do that. And I said, what simple ideas could you do with this? And then a young person started saying, you know what, I think there's a lot that can be done with eyesight. And this was just off a conversation of augmented reality. So it just goes to show, it brings out their interest and passion, but you've got to take the time to talk to them. And you don't have to be an engineer to do it. You don't have to be a master in STEM or STEAM or anything. You've literally just got to be able to have the time to communicate with a young person, talk with them, talk to them, not talk at them. Big part of our training with our ambassadors was like, these are young people. Don't talk at them, talk to them. I'm going to hear from you at the end of the day, who the students you spoke to and their names and their interests and their passions, because you're going to learn so much more by changing that
Absolutely,
style. And it did, and it worked.
So what myths would you like to dispel about engineering?
Oh, engineers is not just for boys. So engineering has predominantly always been a sector which has been recognised to be male dominated. It has and continues to be. Organisations like the IET, the Royal Academy of Engineering, and many of the other independent organisations, charities and bodies are doing amazing work and are dispelling rumours. And the This Is Engineering campaign, which has been going on since the Year of Engineering. Of course, going back, I can't remember what year we're in technically. COVID, just it's like pre-COVID, post-COVID. So This Is Engineering was part of the Year of Engineering, which was a government-backed program. I want to say it was 2018,
I
maybe
can't remember, to be fair.
something like that. So we were one of those co-partners and sponsors, and the work that has come out the back of that has been phenomenal. And I think to dispel the careers is, there's not one route. There's not just one type of person. But like I say, we've already just spoke about that sexual orientation. Anyone could be an engineer. You don't have to be male, you don't have to be female. You could be any identification for sexual orientation to be an engineer, number one. Two, you do not have to go to university to be an engineer.
No.
There are certain disciplines that require you to have a further level of knowledge. I completely understand, and I know that, and I appreciate that. But the careers and the career pathways into engineering are vast. And I think if someone had told me that career pathways were vast, I would have been so hung up on one route, and that one route didn't get me where I wanted to go with it. And yeah, so I know now that you've got, your apprenticeships, you've got internships, you've got placements, you've got T levels, you've got vocations, from a being a child of the vocational area. I'm a massive endorser of it, and I think, yeah, it's a shame that we're not as focusing as much on those. And so many people I speak to in education says, do you know what, I wish we'd stopped pushing vocational away, because it's just as important today as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think even King Charles recently had a little bit of a rant about how we're not doing enough there. So again, it just goes to show that everyone recognizes that value. So the careers pathway is something, do your research, find out. We barely had Google when I was in school. I say barely. I'm a the Ask Jeeves generation.
I remember
Jeeves
that,
generation. And yeah, I think there's so many more ways now you can find that information, but also I'm extremely mindful of so much white noise out there. Go to those leading bodies, go to the Royal Academy of Engineering, go to the IET, go to the IMECE, go to every kind of engineering body you can find. Find a descriptive, find out what who it is and what they do, who do they support, what do they offer. If there isn't a body that supports what kind of engineering you're into, great, you're already thinking ahead. But think of someone who's doing something like that today. I saw something recently that Netflix have just announced a new gaming studio in Europe. How you're thinking, why is this linked to engineering? Because they need engineers, they need designers and developers, they need engineers to create the software, they to create the technology. Engineers is someone who just fixes the car. There's the engineers are someone who brought that car into an existence. Every single inch of that has an engineer on it in one way, shape, or form. And then you apply that to everything else you see around you. And an engineer is everywhere. Pick your interest and then go and see what they speak to you, but don't feel limited is the worry I think many people have with that.
So what do you see as the biggest challenges ahead of engineering then?
I don't think they're challenges. I think they're opportunities. I think people would recognize them as challenges, but I would say innovation. People will go, well, we don't know where we're going yet. You kind of do. Like, look at the history and then look to today. You can already plan where you're going to go or where you want to go. So the challenges, I think, come down to what's next. We've moved through the industrial age so quickly into this digital age, 4.0. We're talking about IoT, all these fun acronyms. And you just think, well, where are we going with it? And it's like, well, decide. Like, you don't have to make everything makes sense today, but you can build up to something else in the future. And I think the challenges that people find in engineering is that it can be vast, it can be intimidating, it might be challenging. But I think as long as people recognize what the challenges are, or in our case, barriers that we talk a lot about, understand what those solutions are as well. The challenge for a young person today might be, I don't feel like I'm academically inclined to get into engineering. Okay, why? Were you like me? Did you not get the grade you needed? Okay, find the other way. Find another way. If there's a barrier in front of you, find a way to go around it. It's something that my parents always taught me. Is if something's going to stop you and you want to do it, find a way to get around it, and work for it and manifest that positivity that you're going to achieve it. So the more you have a goal and a focus, you'll overcome those challenges personally and professionally. I think from an industry perspective, the challenge that many of them have in engineering, and I obviously, again, not an engineer, I can't talk for the whole of the sector of engineering. However, considering I work very closely with engineering organisations and I have done a lot of work with them,
yeah,
I recognise the issues they have is building a pool of talent. And I use the word pool because it's quite important, and I read it around the Aspires project from Louise Archer at UCL, which was a focus on young people's perceptions of STEAM and STEM and also careers. The word pipeline says it's singular. You know, we're all in a queue, but a pool of talent is, oh, this person can do this, this and this, or they can do that, or this, they can do this, this and this. So you're in a pool, you're in a collective of opportunity. And I think the more we think about the pool of talent, not just being one skill but multi-skilled, we'll overcome a lot of challenges engineering or organizations find or will experience in the future. It comes down to the skills, the education part, but make it multi-skilled, multifaceted, that pool will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we'll overcome so many more barriers and challenges by engaging. One of the big challenges I recognised earlier, and I think I've said it a couple of times, is the curriculum. We don't recognise engineering
absolutely.
Subject at school.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a teacher. I work with teaching. I've never been in a teaching role. But I've been asked so many times, why are you not? Because to be honest, I don't want to fall into the side of teaching which isn't the best side of teaching.
I get that, yeah.
And I think the biggest challenge that teachers and educators find is engineering isn't deemed high enough on the agenda for education as other topics. And then you could argue the same with design technology. The Design Technology Association are doing amazing work with like the Blueprint 1000 projects, and they are banging their fists on the door and government saying, you've got to change your tone and tactic in curriculum. They're probably one of the biggest voices I've heard for design technology and for that whole STEAM and STEM agenda in a non-specific way. They're very, very good at pushing and creating those conversations. So, yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to focus. And because we put all of our young people through education at home and in school, if engineering isn't on the agenda for a topic of choice and discussion, it's never going to innovate and adapt going forward.
No. So have you had any mentors that have helped you in your journey and that continue to help you?
I have, yeah. I suppose the first mentor I ever had, was my father. I've always had a close relationship with both my parents. They are separated now. My dad has always been a great mentor and a champion for me. He helped encourage me when I was younger. It was weird actually, I was having a conversation with one of my freelancers the other day. We were in Northampton and we went past what used to be Maplin's.
All right.
It's like smiling. Again, nerd kid. It's a nerd kid. My mentor, my father, would take me to Maplin's for my birthday. I didn't want to go to Toys R Us. I wanted to go to Maplin's. I was that kid. And, you know, when you have people like that around you who support your ambition and aspiration, they are mentors. They don't have the title of mentor, but I recommend mentor me there. So personally, I've got a fantastic mentor in my father. Professionally, I would probably say my first proper mentor when I entered the world of industry. So when I wasn't a nanny and I got told to grow up and do all that fun stuff. As proper mentor was a guy called Neo, who I worked with in MISCO, and he was an amazing mentor. And I put him alongside all the other leaders who were there, I learned more from him from communication, leadership, empathy, customer service, problem solving, than I did with many of the others there. He helped create a foundation in my mind, what they were. And from Neo, a great mentor I had was then Mike, the scientist, Mike Sherrard.
Right.
Again, I was working in exhibitions for a while before I went and joined New Scientist and met Mike. And he helped me understand the opportunity that was out there. He was very, very supportive personally and professionally. I was going through a lot of changes personally in my life then.
Yeah.
And he was a great support, and he was a great mentor, and I learned so much from him. That really kind of helped solidify my own understanding for project management and planning and financial management, because it was a sales role.
Yeah.
And then he won't kill me if I don't say his name, but he definitely did mentor me. It was James Howarth, RS Components.
Right.
We had a great working relationship. We fought like cat and dog, but also we did. We got on really well when it came down to again communication, negotiation.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of really good skills and traits from him. And again, similar to Neo and Mike and managers, I would say those mentors in my professional life, I recognize them as leaders. And I think there's a big difference between a manager and a leader.
Yeah.
I've learned some amazing traits from managers, but I've learned better qualities from leaders.
Right.
And there are some people who are managers who are not great at supporting and leading people. And unfortunately, I've had to work with people like that before, and you can't control that. But something that I do today is I've magpied what I recognize to be a great leader,
Yeah.
and I put that in my role. So I am open, I am empathetic. People ask me how I am, and I go, yeah, I'm okay, but are you a really, I'm not, do you know what, it hasn't been great. This kind of happened, or that's kind of happened. And people can probably chastise you for that. So, you shouldn't be mixing those, you shouldn't talk about that. And I'm like, but why not? If I've had a bad day and you see it in my face or hear it in my voice, would you not rather know? Or would you rather just kind of ignore that? Because that whole thing of be kind, it's you've got to ensure you understand what that person's going through entirely. It's a professional and personal life, but also I think the qualities of a great leader has the opportunity, has the ability to talk about both, but still being private about it. But then
Absolutely.
also being a way that you engage with your team. I try and see as many of my freelancers every month as possible. The majority of them are based around the UK. So a lot of it is done virtually. But the more I travel, the more I will be seeing more of them, which is fantastic. And I make sure that I have time with them. We're not talking just about work, we're talking about life, family, goals, ambitions, because I want to ensure that they're getting the best out of me, and I could help excel and promote them and do what they want to do too. So yeah, my mentors have greatly varied. And then so yeah, there's James RS, and also I had a fantastic mentor who was like my buddy mentor when I was there. So again, that's something that the organization helped me set up with a gentleman called Benjamin Rowley. He's still at RS, and I was in London last week. Where are we? No, this week. I was in London this week. I was in King's Cross. I've had meetings in King's Cross, and Ben said Ben is based there, so it's RS. And yeah, so we have a catch up beforehand, before my upcoming meeting in the area. And it's great, because as much as he still helps me give a little bit of sage business advice, he's also very good as a friend. And so yeah, there's several people in my life who have been great mentors, and many of them are, in this case, they're all male, which is not a bad thing. I have a fantastic group of friends and networks who I lean on, and they're all female. So I've got a very nice balance of mentors and supporters, really.
So then, how do you keep yourself motivated?
Yeah, do you know what? This is actually a question I've actually been working a lot on the last month, probably this last month. So yeah, it's a weird one. It's been a fantastic summer, it's been a fantastic year. The last probably 4 weeks I felt probably strained, purely because it's that weird time of coming out the back of summer, we're coming into Christmas. It's that weird little limbo time where things are wrapping up. Projects that had the pins put in them, things coming to the end, new projects are due to start in the new year. So you're kind of trying to find out what am I doing today?
Yeah.
And motivation is very, very hard. And going through redundancy and going through new roles and building businesses, it was so hard to keep motivated. My biggest source of motivation, and you can't see this because we're just voicing,
Yeah.
but I have actually got my gym kit on because I will go to the gym afterwards. And the gym to me is kind of my level of motivation. I go to the gym not to become a bodybuilder. I have no dreams of doing that. I go to the gym because I feel good. I feel achievement. I physically see and feel change, and I physically see and feel a change in my mindset. So what I find that if I go to the gym, it always somehow extends my day by an extra 3 or 4 hours in work. It'll then take me from the, oh, I haven't got any plans this afternoon, to, wow, I literally smashed out 20 things in 4 hours. How amazing is that? So my biggest motivation has continues to be going to the gym. And yeah, I go maybe 3 or 4 times a week, but the last couple of weeks have been quite hard with times and bits and pieces and deadlines that we've been working on. So yeah, my team are going, you need to get back to the gym. You can tell you've been to the gym. So yeah, my gym is my biggest source of motivation. I have a really, really bad, a really bad interest as well, in that me and my friends, we communicate mainly through TikTok or Facebook Reels. Stupid videos that just make you laugh, just belly laugh videos, voice notes all the time. And you know, some of them it's not even like coherent actual conversations, just voices. Like we just kind of keep each other on highs by sending funny videos or sending funny memes and just silly things that just, you know, a little laugh takes
Yeah,
you.
absolutely.
And you know, I go to the gym and I'll do 20 of this, I'll get 10 more out, get more 10 more out. And it's yeah, I achieve that. And the only person I'm letting down is myself. So if I don't do those, the motivation is it's very literally that self-sustaining motivation. And doing this role, being a founder and a director of a business, it is hard. It does feel a bit lonely sometimes. I work from home 99% of the time, and which it can be hard because I have a dog, and I'm pretty sure I talk to my dog more than I do most people when I'm not on the phone or in meetings. And yeah, it's actually gone from like 2 words to actual full blown out sentences with him. Even my friends are like, why are you talking to the dog? Like, no one's here. So my motivation is like a very social setting with friends and family, which is predominantly supported virtually, but also that physical managing my time and going to do something that I can see how it pushes and supports me, and it's something I keep doing as well.
So then who or what has been your biggest inspiration?
My biggest inspiration. Oh, it's weird. It's a weird question. It's weird. I always say it comes down to which day you're asking, what time of the day you're asking, and what I'm doing. So on this Friday, mid-morning, nearly lunchtime, I would say my biggest inspiration has would it kind of comes down to. This is like the day that I use a lot to reflect on the week and plan for the weekend. So it's a good day to ask that question. So my biggest inspiration is probably, again, comes down to my mother and my father. Again, they're not together anymore, but they're doing their own thing. My father lives in Cambodia with my brother, and they own a business over there. So they run a bed and breakfast in Kampot. And I've visited twice, and it's lovely. So they inspire me by working so hard in a country that not many people have had the luck of going to. A beautiful country with amazing people, and has got an awesome ambition and aspiration. So they inspire me to go, if I feel like I'm not doing something well today, I think, well, actually, think about them, think about what
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
doing.
yeah.
So and then my mother, she will hate me for saying this, but I don't think she'll listen to this, obviously. She is just on just the plus side of 60. And you know, she, only in the last 18 months did she actually go and get a new job.
Right.
And I remember having conversations with her about, you know, her leaving her old job, and it was in telecoms, and she wanted to do something that was more challenging,
Right.
which is something very rare that you hear of that generation to say.
Yeah.
And so she inspires me by going, you know what, I'm 34, she's 60 something, and she still works so hard, and
Yeah.
she's still supporting, and she's still engaging, and she lives with my sister and her husband and her three children.
Right.
And you know, she's the role of the mother, the nan, the worker, the sister, because my aunt lives around the corner. So she is still the same person she was 20, 30, 40 years ago, and she's got no signs of slowing down. She goes to the gym as well. She's definitely giving me a run for my money. So yeah, we go to different gyms, but I see her videos and I'm like, I really need to get back to the gym. So yeah, but it's great because you know she inspires me by going, do you know what, you could be thinking and still be this active, amazing social person. So the biggest inspiration journey is my family, my parents, my sister going back to university. She's going back to do her midwifery.
Right.
She was the first one in my family to go to university, but she was experiencing things and had to drop out quite early on when we were younger.
Okay.
Now got a husband and three children, beautiful, beautiful family, and now she's gone back to university. You know, she's got three kids who gives all her time and energy to, and then she goes off and she's doing her midwifery course and she's learning this and doing her essays. And you know, I'm so proud of her. I'm
Yeah,
so
it's
proud
amazing.
of. You know, again, you don't have to have it all sorted out when you're 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
We're all in our 30s, the kids in my family.
Yes.
So the fact is that she's 36 and she's gonna be a phenomenal midwife because she's got lived experience from having
Yeah.
children.
Yeah,
She's
yeah.
started it previously. She kind of saw what was being taught then, but now she sees what's being taught now. So she's kind of got that, interestingly, she's kind of got that old education and new
Yeah,
education
yeah.
happening. And yeah, I don't see her enough, and I do feel bad about that. But we're so both so busy. But she's amazing at what she does, and I literally kudos to her because I'm a three kids, busy house, busy this, busy that, and you're in education, and you're doing this, and you're, do you know what I mean? Inspiration can come from anywhere. But yeah, and then there's all my friends. So everyone's doing everything different. I won't name them all because they're all there. But yeah, I think everyone is what you take from inspiration. And like I've said it several times in this session, is that I magpie quite a lot from people. I magpie the best. I magpie their what I would like to manifest. I magpie the goals and dreams that I add to my own, and I magpie their determination and resilience, because I think, again, I have every week since I've been doing this, the STEM project, have had a case of imposter syndrome. Multiple voice notes at least a week that I send friends that I'm like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. Is this the right thing? And they're all like, you say that they always say that you always say the problem, and then you tell us the solution. Like, why are you freaking out about this? And again, it's the inspiration is it come it links to motivation, right? So if you unless you're not motivated, you're never going to see the inspiration. Unless you're inspired, you're never going to be motivated. So I have a kind of an on tap both, which is great, and so I always combine those. And yeah, I think it's it doesn't you don't have to be 30, 4, 36, 62, 70, whatever. You could be 15, 17, 19. You could still feel be inspired. And that's what I love about like the human nature part.
So it's important to develop ourselves, continue to develop. Obviously, you're in that business. How do you develop yourself on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
Oh gosh. So I have obviously, as I've mentioned, I went to further higher education, which is my master's, in STEM education, finishing all the bits off, and then it's all done. So in my life, in my I suppose in this element of career for education in the industry, there isn't a set pathway. There isn't. I love reading. I do love reading. You can't see it on this, but there is like an awful stack of shelves behind me, full of like folders and books. And I, again, the nerd kid, I've got all my books from when I was younger, but these weren't, all my animal arcs are in the loft. But I've got all my Dan Brown books and things like that. And I love reading. And I self-develop through reading because I think it's very good for the imagination. It's very good for inspiration. I would love to say I listen to podcasts, but I'd lie all the time. I say they are on in the background when I'm doing stuff. And then I'll hear something and then I'll rewind it and then I'll listen to it again and then I'll go off and do some research. And so I something I'm going to try and do more of in the new year because resolution time, right? Week. I'm in the car long enough that I should have the ability to do that. So yeah, I develop a lot through mental stimulation, physical, going to the gym, and social education. I'm never going to shut the door on education, I don't think. I don't think you ever stop learning.
No.
And I think that's a really age-old statement. A lot of people say, you never stop learning. No, you really don't. You don't have to go to college or university to learn more or read a book. You
Yeah,
learn
absolutely.
or you learn more by listening to people. And again, that's what I love about this. I learn something new every day. I think was it Tom Briggs, one of the freelancers, he was telling me about how he engaged his year seven in maths, which is really, really hard because I hated maths. I sucked. I felt like I really needed to go. I needed to share this with Tom again. Like I didn't like it. Then I said, how do you get a kid into it? And he explained it to me. And I was amazed how he did it. And I would, I wish someone like you like that helped me when I was younger and helped my interest and passion in this. And he started talking about maths with this one lad, and Tom plays a guitar, and the lad was like, oh, I've just started playing the guitar, blah, blah, blah. And then he started going, oh, did you know how music started? And he was like, no. And he's like, oh, it started with this civilization. And then he started like linking it, and it's all true. It's all true. And then this lad's like, oh, wow, geez. And he told me the story, and I could see his face lighting up, and he was telling me, and it was really cool. And he's saying how, by the end of the conversation, they were talking about Googleplexes. And I was like, what's a Googleplex? And he's like, it's the highest number you can ever get in the world. And I'm like, what? He went, a Google, and then Google. And I'm like, no, that's what the search engine is based on. And the Googleplex. And the way that he finished it with the young lad, and he finished with me, because then I was like, what next? Was a Googleplex is a number so high and infinite that you could never write it out entirely. There's more atoms in the universe than there is the numbers to complete a Googleplex. And that's the way he finished it with me. I was like, oh God, that's amazing. He's like, yeah. And I was like, I'm glad that you're with the team. Like that, like lifelong learning is, and that was over lunch. Googleplexes from guitars. I mean, it just goes to show that you learn something everywhere every day. And that's what I love about life. That's what I love about my job. That's what I love about work is every day is a learning day. And whether it's through books, podcasts, or education, it's sometimes putting your phone down because we're all guilty of it and looking up. Looking up at what's going on around us in our town, in our community, in our environment. We're all seeing and feeling it right now. So yeah, it's the you develop through your own self-preservation and for your own interests is how I see it.
Yeah. And finally, Laura, looking forward, what does the future hold for you?
I have no idea.
I
I
knew
don't.
that was coming.
I really don't know. I think, a year ago I was in a farm shop weighing up bananas, vegetables, and doing this on the side. Like literally a year ago today.
Yeah.
And now I'm talking to you. I've spoke to a few others in media of late. We've got some big projects coming up. I've got meetings coming up with organizations that I didn't think that I'd ever be talking to.
Yeah.
And I'd love to say that we are going to be the giant. I don't want to be a giant anything. I hope the future will be prosperous and bright. And I think leaving it on a note of manifesting positivity and planning for a future which is unknown, because we all are not quite sure
Yeah.
what's happening in the world today. Planning for your future which is unknown is really hard, but the way I plan the future is I can only control what I can control. I
Yeah.
only stress about what I can control. So I can stress about going to the gym this afternoon because I can control it. I can't control whether it's going to rain in 2 hours' time.
Yeah.
As long as I can control it, I will do it. And if it means I can't ha have no ability to do it now, I will find a way to do it in the future. I will go round the problem to get there.
Yeah.
And that's what I will do. And yeah, the future is going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be busy.
Yeah.
I've got personal ambitions and goals that I would like to achieve before I'm 35, 38, and 40.
Yeah.
It's not one of those like, oh my God, these are milestones. These are just things I hope to achieve. If I don't, I don't.
Yeah.
But they're the milestones. And I think if we don't set milestones for ourselves that we can proactively reach, then why are we doing it?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. Laura, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been absolutely brilliant to speak to
Yes, thank you for your time. It's a very long time. I appreciate that. But no, yeah, it's been great, and be interested to hear what people have to say and what comes up next.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No worries. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you for listening to episode number 37 of Engineering Success with our very special guest, Laura Giddings. Laura is doing amazing work at the STEM Project, and I think her journey just highlights that when you are passionate about something, no obstacles can stand in your way. Laura is making a huge difference to young people in helping them to understand STEM and the importance it has on our lives. Encouraging and inspiring the next generation of professionals, Laura's work at the STEM Project is essential in helping to highlight the importance of STEM and ignite a spark for young people to become more inquisitive of the world around them. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love for you to share it with somebody you feel would benefit from listening to it. And please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. We've got some more great guests coming soon. So, until the next episode, have a great day, and I hope you succeed in all you do.